Unfortunately, he always leaves puddles of pee on the floor when he uses the bathroom.
Puddles?
Yeah. This has happened many times, and I make my husband bleach the floor when he leaves.
Good.
I can't stand seeing puddles of pee on the floor in our shared bathroom for days on end. Should my husband say something to him before he visits? How does he even start this conversation? Signed, pissed off.
Welcome to Hey You Know It. My name is Jaquetta Sotmar, and I'm here with my co-host,
Katie Kazmir. Hey You Know It is a podcast that tells you how it is or how it should be.
You can listen to Hey You Know It on iTunes, a new episode every Monday.
And here they are, Jaquetta and Katie.
Hey, Case. So I wanted to just start off with, I use the phrase happy as Larry quite
you
a lot.
You do, and I enjoy it every time. And it never gets old. I like it sincerely.
You have asked me what it means, and I said, I don't know. Mm-hmm. So I was like, let me look this up. So this is from, I found this online, the Mystery Hour question. Where does the expression happy as Larry come from? Who was Larry?
Yes. All right. Good.
So it originates from a boxer called Larry Foley in the 1890s, before boxing was legalized. He apparently won a prize of $150,000 in 1890.
Wow.
And a newspaper article in New Zealand had the headline, Happy as Larry.
Okay. Yeah.
That's where it comes from.
Okay.
That's it. And then also I followed up with happy, you know, happy as a clam.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't understand where that came from either. And apparently happy as a clam, people think it comes from the fact that a clam looks like it's smiling.
Okay.
But the full phrase is as happy as a clam in high water. Because when the water is high, the clams are safe from predators and they have everything that they need.
And snackers.
And snackers as well.
Like us.
So as happy as a clam in high water, it's high tide when the clams are free from the attention of predators. It's the happiest time for a bivalve mollusk. Apparently. So those were those two phrases come from. So happy as Larry from the 1890s. And the earliest version, citation they could find of happy as a clam is in 1833.
Mm.
So now I know what those things mean.
That's great. And we all know.
Yeah.
Know now.
Happy as Larry. I never would have been able to even figure that one out on my own. Happy as Larry. All right.
I love it. Thank you.
So what do you have?
Germans are advised to walk like penguins on ice.
By whom?
By the trauma surgeons.
By Germans?
German trauma surgeons.
Okay. I thought it was another cut. Like, Lithuanians suggest that Germans walk like a penguin. Others may walk like an Egyptian. That's up to you.
Yeah.
But
for fun.
For fun.
But this trauma surgeons in Germany advised the public just recently, this was just a few weeks ago.
It's come here for the news.
To walk like penguins to avoid slipping on pavements with freezing temperatures.
How does a penguin walk?
They said that, trauma surgery said that walking like an aquatic bird involves leaning the torso forward.
Mm-hmm.
So the center of gravity is on the front leg.
Okay.
There's a drawing that they attached
of course
to the advisory explaining.
And because
that,
it's German, it probably has like 18 points on
yeah
it.
Yeah. Explain when humans walk normally, the body weight is split evenly amongst both legs.
Yeah.
Which the surgeons say increases the risk of losing one's balance and falling on a slippery surface.
Okay.
So.
You gotta waddle back and forth?
Yeah, and lean kind of forward.
See, I have a policy of when I'm walking that everything just goes forward. I don't want anything going to the side.
Yeah.
Like back and forth. Everyone just goes forward.
Yeah. So municipal authorities in Berlin were criticized over the failure to sprinkle the capital's pavements with rock salt.
Okay.
In January of 2014.
They still talk about this?
They still talk about it. They still talk about it. And as a result, rescue services received more than 750 emergency calls.
Wow. Because people busted their chops.
And yeah, and emergency rooms were overstretched with patients with bone fractures.
Wow.
Because they're walking like nothing's happening.
And also, like in the U.S., everybody's old.
Yeah.
Right?
750 people
That's
fell
crazy,
down.
That's crazy, because they didn't sprinkle the sidewalks.
Right. But also, people are walking. When people encounter ice,
yeah,
you've got to
slow
the way
down.
You walk.
It's the same thing when people drive and in inclement weather. Just slow down. Mm. That's all. Just slow down. Like, it's okay if you get where you're going late if you, like, don't have a fractured bone and are alive.
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly. But they're just, you know, cutting loose. I like
that. They had to let people know. So I have got a very interesting penis news here. This is my favorite segment where I do dick updates, scrotum stories, the member on the move. I could not believe this. Would you want to have unwanted body fat injected into your penis? A new trend sees men move excess inches from their waist to their manhood to make it bigger.
Okay.
So we've all heard of the ass fat boob job.
Mm-hmm.
This is the ass fat dick job.
Okay.
Basically.
So this is happening?
This is happening. This is a real thing. Men have long been concerned with the size of their penis. Women are not.
No.
Women are really not. No one cares. Pills and potions have proven ineffective. Bizarre stretching devices don't work either. The penis pumps, none of that stuff works.
Nothing works.
But now a cosmetic surgeon in London.
Nothing works and nobody cares.
No one cares.
Yeah.
A cosmetic surgeon in London is offering dissatisfied men a game changer. And he's calling it penoplasty. I thought panoply would be better.
Panoply?
Yes, I don't know why. But then penoplasty just doesn't sound really good for me. So basically they take fat from the abdomen or lower back. So this is for guys who are getting body contouring, right? They're getting lipo or something like that. And they take that out and they put it into the dick.
Mm-hmm.
It costs about 5,000 pounds. It says there are some risks, like all elective surgery, like all surgery. For example, the fat can turn lumpy, but you could take care of this by gently massaging the area. So this is this guy's story.
Okay, so.
Daniel's story. I never thought I'd be the sort of person to have a penis enlargement, but it happened by chance after I decided to have liposuction on my belly.
Oh, okay.
I lost a lot of weight when my marriage broke down in 2011, but I couldn't shift the pond from around my middle. So after doing some research, I looked into a form of liposuction called phaser, in which which is kind of like a nicer version of what they used to have.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here's the part where I can see the equality of the sexes happening. It was during the consultation for this that my surgeon offered to replant the fat back into my body.
I would say to a surgeon that suggested you need this, why don't you put this in your penis?
Yes. Like,
wow.
Mm-hmm.
I've noticed your manhood was not quite
there. Yeah, but that's what plastic surgeons do. So, you know, if you go in for one, they say you have a scar.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, yeah, I'll fix your scar. But have you thought about your earlobes?
Oh.
We're going to be here anyway.
Yeah.
So I wasn't unhappy with my size before. So this guy didn't have a problem.
Mm-hmm.
With it. He was very happy with his penis. But it seemed like an opportunity worth taking, especially if I was already undergoing the surgery. Oops. See how the upsell works? It was a case of waste not, want not.
There I was on the surgeon's table, minding my own business.
My own business.
Suddenly, when I woke, my penis was huge.
It was a case of waste not, want not, because the fat would have only have been thrown away. Oh, like maybe you could have sent the fat to Africa for starving people with small penises. Like, really? This is not, like, your body fat is not a commodity that we have to worry about wasting.
Mm-hmm.
There's plenty of it around the world.
You can always make more.
There's always more to be made. So the day came, he was nervous. He wasn't sure if he wanted someone to operate on his penis, because keep in mind, there's nothing wrong with it, but something could go wrong. But he was sedated for the lipo. They took the fat out, and then they made a small incision at the base of the penis. This guy was still awake while they did this.
Ugh.
And then used an anesthetic to numb the area, and then re-injected the fat. So they sucked it out of one area, and then turned right around and put it somewhere else. There was some pulling and stretching to ensure the fat was evenly spread. I can't imagine doing this.
No.
Which was slightly unpleasant, but not painful. So for the first 24 hours, he had to wear loose-fitting boxer shorts, and it was under strict instructions to avoid having penetrative sex for a few weeks. He didn't mind, though, because it was already thicker and it seemed heavier. The girlfriend commented on the extra girth. We eventually had sex, and she said it made a significant difference. We both benefited. He said, I know men will wince, but I'm so happy I had the surgery. My penis is considerably bigger, but what's grown the most is my confidence. It's so strange to me that gives something that no one could really see. Like, only your girlfriend knows.
Right.
Unless you're waving this thing around.
Right. And he never had a problem before.
He didn't have a problem before.
But suddenly.
So what they're doing now is, okay, so traditionally, we report on stuff that's trying to make the penis longer, but that's not where it's at, because only the first, the lower third of the vagina is sensitive.
Mm-hmm.
Once you get past that, it could be anything.
Yeah.
It could be a Mack truck, a shoe, a penguin on ice. It doesn't matter. But he increased girth between 1 to 2 inches is what they can do. So they can make it bigger. And they're saying any more than that, and women are not interested. Yeah. So that's the max that you can do. Yeah, this is penoplasty, or as I like to call it, panoply. Panopolis, I don't know. It says, we believe that the penoplasty is justified when the psychological benefits outweigh the risk and the cost of the procedure. However, a man's best sexual organ is his brain. And most men feel much more confident about themselves after the operation. I feel terrible that there are guys out there who have a lack of confidence in an organ that's been working for them their entire lives. Right. Like nothing, you know, it's not like they've gone to pee and, you know, coal came out of it or like they've not been able to get it up. This guy's penis was fine.
Yeah.
It was totally fine.
Yeah.
He was going in for something else. So welcome to our world, gentlemen. And with that, that's my penis news. Mm. So crazy. Hey, by the way, would you like me to inject this into your penis?
Well, I never thought of it, but yes, I would like
but
that.
But that's how advertising works for women, right? It's like, oh, I didn't realize that was old and ashy.
I didn't realize.
Until I saw this ad.
Right, or my armpits were unattractive.
I didn't realize that my armpits were unattractive. I didn't know that I need vaginal, like, rejuvenation.
I didn't know that my butt needed to be bleached.
I didn't know that my second toe needed to be shaved down to be shorter than my big toe.
It must
I had
be.
No idea. It's so bizarre. I hope the long-term effects of this are good for the guy. Yeah. I don't know. I'd hate for him to wake up one day and the fat's moved. He's just got an enormous ball. Anyway, what do you have?
I have advice on advice.
All right. Advice on advice is a segment where we find advice on the internet that stinks.
And it's unqualified.
And we improve upon it by giving our advice on that advice. Hence, advice on advice.
Okay.
So who's it from?
Dear Prudence.
Nice. Always good.
I have an army of advice.
Well, march on, sister.
Okay. Okay. Dear Prudence, my brother-in-law is a great guy, and I'm happy to have him visit.
This already. I'm like, that's how it starts.
Right. Unfortunately, he always leaves puddles of pee on the floor when he uses the bathroom.
Puddles?
Yeah. This has happened many times, and I make my husband bleach the floor when he leaves.
Good.
I can't stand seeing puddles of pee on the floor in our shared bathroom for days on end. Should my husband say something to him before he visits? How does he even start this conversation? Signed, pissed off.
Okay. So first of all, bravo for that sign off.
Yeah.
I hope that the reason that there's pee on the floor is not because it's a health issue.
Mm.
You know, but regardless of that, dude, sit down.
Yeah.
Just sit down. That's
Nobody
all.
Nobody knows.
No. Yeah. No one's going to know. No one's going to be looking to see, you know, which direction your feet are facing underneath the stall either. Like just have a seat. Take care of it.
And regardless, if you pee on the floor, you clean it up.
Clean it up.
Why are you leaving it there?
I mean, I guess I would maybe like put a bowl under there with a note that's like, hey.
If you miss what's going on inside.
Yes. Imagine what this would be like without this bowl here. That's crazy. Puddles of pee. Okay.
Okay. So the advice is, yes, your husband should talk to him. When someone pisses on your floor, it is perfectly appropriate to say, don't piss on my floor.
Yes. Yeah, sorry, I just went right by that. It is someone taking a pee on your floor.
Yeah, and ask him to clean it up. The time for coitus ends when you slip in a puddle of someone else's urine in your own home.
Oh, my God, no.
You're not doing him or the other bathrooms in the world any favors by letting this slide.
Oh, that's awful.
Come on.
Really?
A grown man.
I mean, this is what I'm saying. If it's a medical thing... Then I'm sure he would clean it. You should clean it up anyway, though, right? Like, wouldn't you be a little... I would be embarrassed under any circumstances to leave urine on someone's floor.
Yeah.
Period.
Yeah. Like, anything on someone's floor.
Yeah, anything in the bathroom on someone's floor.
And quite frankly, we have a lot more fluid to deal with.
Yes, we do.
And we manage to...
Yes.
Not
things happen. Things happen. That's why people have in their bathroom those little brushes.
Mm-hmm.
They have toilet paper. You could always come out and say, hey, could I get a sponge?
Mm-hmm.
I need to wipe down the sink.
I need some 409.
Yeah. I need to... And put it on the sink.
Mm-hmm.
You know, say I need to wipe down the sink or do something and then just surreptitiously clean up the urine.
Mm-hmm.
That's bizarre.
Or those Clorox wipes.
Yeah.
Keep them around. Yeah, but the guy is just like, you know what?
Maybe him.
I'm leaving this right here.
On the way in, you should be like, here you go.
With the Clorox wipe.
Yeah.
Take this in with
just
you.
Just dab it. hold this underneath. Mm-hmm. I don't know. All right. What else has Prudy got?
Okay. Pissed off. This one is interesting. Dear Prudence, my wife of 43 years died an excruciating death from lung cancer in April.
Okay.
We were childless, which I thought was a sorrow to both of us, but I was wrong.
Excuse me.
We are simple people who never consulted a doctor or fertility clinic about the problem.
Mm-hmm.
2 days before she died, my wife said God was punishing her, not for her lifetime smoking habit, as I expected, but because she had taken birth control pills for 20 years without my knowledge.
What?
Yeah.
Why?
Worse, she had 2 abortions without telling me. Of course, this completely blew me out of the water.
Okay.
Yeah. I told her I forgave her, but that's not really true. I am stunned beyond belief. Mourning the children we never had, who could have been such a joy and comfort.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess not, though.
Yeah, the only person I could think of to confide in was a parish priest who told me that she's burning in hell and will do so for eternity.
Really?
I really don't think that's true, but she was otherwise a very good woman. But now I don't feel welcome at church as well. I think this will haunt me until the end of my days, and I feel helpless to counteract it. Any advice you could give me would be very much appreciated.
Why doesn't he feel comfortable at church?
Well, I guess now that the priest knows, and then the priest is like, your wife is
burning
hell.
Is that, okay, I defer to you. Is that something a priest should tell people? Does a priest definitively know that that woman didn't, at the moment of her death, accept?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what is it that you guys can do at the last minute? Like, if you're Catholic,
you have a confession.
You can confess,
and you're absolved of your sins.
Yeah, and do you have to do it to a priest though, or can you just do it to your God?
Usually, if you're Catholic, you have to do it to a priest.
Okay,
and usually on your deathbed, you have last rites.
Yeah,
and so a priest will come to you. Like,
okay,
if the family makes the call, like she's dying, he's dying.
So I'm assuming she had last rites, right?
Yeah, right.
Maybe not with that guy. That guy sounds awful.
But still, I mean, no.
Why would you say that to somebody?
As in the position of the priest, you are there to comfort your
parishioner. That's what I'm saying. Even if you think that woman is burning in hell,
mm-hmm.
why would you say that to her grieving?
Well, maybe he's trying to make the partner feel better. Like, you know what? She pulled the wool over your eyes for 20 years. Yeah, she's burning in hell. He's like, that's right.
That's not going to make him feel better. He doesn't even think she's burning in hell.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder why. She didn't want to have kids.
Mm.
Like, maybe she had some kind of congenital defect that she was afraid to pass on.
Right, right.
Or, I don't know, there must have been a reason for it.
Yeah, and she was maybe...
And it's her reason.
Yeah.
And right?
Maybe it was she was too afraid to tell him.
Yeah.
Or that she'd end up not married.
I mean, it's terrible that they didn't discuss it, but that's extreme.
Yeah.
There must have been something going on there.
There's got to be some... The communication thing between the two of them must have been terrible.
Maybe he had some kind of defect. I don't know.
Or maybe they were, you know, set in some part of the country where you can't take birth control. And especially in religion.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Maybe it was at a time where it was not allowed. In Catholicism, they're not allowed to have birth control.
Yeah, I didn't think about that. I'm just imagining there must have been some reason. Mm. I mean, that's extreme. Right? That's a difficult decision to make.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. Boo on that priest, though. That doesn't sound right to me at all.
No.
Yeah, she's burning in hell.
Great. Burning in hell. And that sounds like if the priest is saying that.
And was he, like, patting him on the back? Like, don't worry. She's burning in hell.
Forever.
The woman that you...
That you loved.
That you loved, who is now gone. Fascinating.
Mm. Yeah, so it makes me also think that this church is really old school and very, like...
It sounds super old school. And now he doesn't feel comfortable going there.
Yeah.
Because he didn't get the comfort that he wanted and rightfully expected his religion to provide.
Because
isn't that a part of it?
Yeah.
Like, you don't want to go to church and get shit on.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Or have the leader of the church thinking that your wife deserves to be.
Yeah, it's a piece of shit.
Right. So, dear Devastated, the cruelty of your wife's behavior, both during your marriage and as she faced her own end, is hard to fathom. The death of a beloved spouse of more than 4 decades is going to upend anyone's world. But, of course, you feel undone by her deathbed confession, and she delivered you, and she deceived you for the eternity of her for the entirety of her reproductive years, and further that she aborted the children for whom you must have prayed.
Mm-hmm. If they were yours.
Mm.
Let's just put that out there.
You say your wife was a very good woman. I'm sure you could unroll an endless list of her genuinely generous and loving acts. but she also engaged in a profound and continuous betrayal of you, and then compounded this by not taking her secret to the grave. She shouldn't have unloaded that.
Yeah, she should have just let it be. That's terrible.
Yeah, I'm not much of an afterlife person, but I agree that your priest's response was gratuitous and mean. He needed to help you sort out your new understanding of your marriage and to compassionately attend to you, the living. If you find solace in your faith, ask among your friends for a parish whose priest has a generous spirit.
Yes. Yes. Someone who's going to give you some comfort.
Yeah. I also urge you to find a counseling center that specializes in bereavement.
Oh, that's a good idea.
That's a good one.
I was going to add that also because he wasn't able to have children in his life, mm-hmm. you can always volunteer, you know, like there are ways that you could have a child in
yes.
your life,
yes.
you know?
Yeah. If you really want to, you can find other yeah. children to mentor. Right.
Or, you know, whatever.
You will be able to talk to a therapist who has likely dealt with patients who have all sorts of shocking pre- and post-mortem discoveries, and who will help you work through both your anger and loss. Your perfectly natural feelings of hurt and helplessness are fresh and raw. That's another thing to remember. When
yeah.
something big hits you,
yeah, yeah,
everything is raw and fresh. And
that's why it's so
you need time to, like, handle it.
Terrible for that priest just to come on with that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's not... He was going there for some comfort mm-hmm. of the shock. Not that.
Yeah.
He'd already been shocked. That's a tough one, though,
yeah.
I gotta say.
I hope you have friends and family who are a comfort and paid or volunteer work that is a satisfaction,
yep.
even though it may be hard to believe now. With help and time, you will be able to heal.
Yeah.
And you will.
Get out there and get busy.
Yeah.
You know, start otherwise you're just going to, like, it's going to fester.
Mm.
I can't imagine if I found out someone had been lying to me, someone that close to me for that long.
About something like that. Yeah. Imagine how scared she was, though, on her deathbed.
Yeah.
Imagine, now she's a religious woman.
Yeah, yeah. She was trying to atone at the end. But she, I wonder why, and we'll never know, but I wonder why she didn't say the reason.
Yeah.
You know? I think I can only think she must have had some kind of health issue.
Yeah.
In which she didn't think she would be able to have a healthy baby.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Or, you know, whatever the reason, she didn't want to have children.
Yeah, she didn't want to have children.
But she knew that her husband did. She didn't
yeah.
want the marriage
to end.
And then the religion thing on top of it.
Yeah.
She couldn't even talk about the birth control.
Yeah.
Because in the church, it's a no-no.
What about something like adoption? I think this woman just didn't want to have any kids.
Mm.
Because that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
That's encouraged,
yeah.
usually in religion,
mm-hmm.
as far as I know. Hmm.
Interesting, right?
Yeah, it is interesting.
Yep.
So I have a little something here. I just wanted to do some follow-up work on my man, Jason Statham.
Oh, Jason Statham.
He is 49 okay. years old, still doing it.
Kicking and punching.
Still kicking and punching. Now he's going to be kicking and punching in a movie called Meg. I think I've mentioned it before. The date of it has been pushed forward. It is, the principal photography is underway in New Zealand, so they started working on it. It's starring Jason Statham and award-winning Chinese actress Li Bingbing, which I think is the best name ever.
Li Bingbing. Yeah.
Last name Bingbing, first name Li. She was in Transformers, Forbidden Kingdom, and The Message. She's starring opposite Statham. It's being filmed in New Zealand and China, and it's about... Now, I've seen every shark movie there is, and even this one, I was like, really? It's about an underwater sea station mm-hmm. that gets knocked to the bottom of the sea, and then guess what? A megalodon, a huge shark,
comes
along
yeah.
and is trying to, you know, just eat what's
it.
Left of it, basically.
Sure.
So, it's attacked, it's disabled at the bottom of the deepest trench in the Pacific.
Ew.
The crew is trapped inside. Time is running out.
Of course, because they're there.
Time is running out. An expert deep sea rescue diver, Jonas Taylor, a.k.a. one, Jason Statham, is recruited by a visionary Chinese oceanographer against the wishes of his daughter, that's Li Bingbing, to save the crew and the ocean itself.
Why?
From this unstoppable threat, a prehistoric 75-foot-long shark known as Megalodon goes by Meg.
Okay.
That's the movie's title. Why didn't they just call it Megalodon?
They just totally, you know, Meg is
Meg.
Meg is your neighbor who makes cookies.
Exactly. What no one could have imagined is that years before, Taylor, played by Staten, had encountered the same terrifying creature.
And doesn't talk about
it. I don't know if it ate his wife or it took his daughter.
Not talking about it at every party.
Now, teamed with Su Yin, that's Li Bingbing, he must confront his fears and risk his own life to save everyone trapped below, bringing him face to face once more with the greatest and largest predator of all time.
But if he knows this particular shark.
It's all of the tropes. It's just kind of like one of my favorite disaster movies is Dante's Peak. Mm-hmm. And the problem with the main character is, you know, a similar volcano killed his girlfriend years earlier.
Yeah.
And so everyone thinks he's just got beef with volcanoes. Yeah. And that's why he's making a big deal out of it. I think it's going to be the same thing. And there's going to be a scene where someone is going to be like, can't you just leave these sharks alone? Mm-hmm. You're just upset because a shark ate your wife and stole your daughter and hit her in a trunk. And you had to go look for her or whatever the situation is.
Yeah, yeah.
And he has to confront his fears, face his past, mm-hmm. and fight Meg. Once
Good
again.
God. I say, why don't just say, hey, listen, everyone in this station at the bottom of the ocean.
We need to get the F out of here.
You know what? It's your time.
It's your time to go.
Do you have messages for your loved ones?
Yeah, do what you have to do. If you guys want to pair off and get a last, you know, session in.
Go for it.
So other people in the film are Cliff Curtis, who's from Fear of the Walking Dead. Rainn Wilson from The Office.
Mm-hmm.
The one who plays Dwight Schrute. Ruby Rose from XXX and Orange is the New Black. Winston Chow, Paige Kennedy, Jessica McNamee. One of my favorite actors, Olafur Dari Olafsson. He's this big Scandinavian guy. He's in everything. Mm-hmm. He's awesome.
Okay.
He's everywhere. He's just like a fun guy. Robert Taylor, Sophia Kai, and Masioka from Hawaii Five-O. Everybody, and the list of people who are directing the right, it's so many people who have been on so many dodgy films. It's going to be an orgy of CG. The only thing that's not going to be CG is Jason Statham's bald head.
And kicking and punching.
Kicking and punching.
Because that's all him.
But he's going to, I imagine, just an endless parade of him in skin suits.
Mm. That's nice.
Yes, because he's 49.
Yeah.
So, I mean, how much shirtless work is he going to do? Let's be honest.
Okay.
Like his, you know, his glory days of having a hot physique. He probably still looks great, but
yeah,
you know,
it's like, come on. He doesn't care anymore.
He doesn't care anymore. He probably is having fun with it.
Yeah.
I thought he had retired for a while.
Mm.
I mean, remember his quote was, "I came from obscurity and I'm not afraid to go back."
Oh.
Like he doesn't think that he started out selling like fragrances off the back of a truck in London. And then he decided he wanted to be a film star. Okay. So he's just like one of these people who's like, hey, as long as it.
If you're going to bite.
Yeah.
I'm going to.
If you're going to bite.
I'll be giving you nuggets.
So, I just. Meg. That's it. Meg.
So we got a tweet.
Okay.
From a listener.
Oh, cool.
Yes.
Listener tweet.
Yes.
Thank you.
Hey, you know it. Thought this might be interesting, might interest you ladies after today's podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a link to the New York City Federation of Black Cowboys.
Ooh!
Because we did a Black History.
Yeah. I'd heard about these guys.
And we talked about how the Cowboys, that one in four were Black.
Yeah, so the song is actually originally, Where Have All the Black Cowboys Gone?
Yeah, so this is there's a New York City-based U.S. organization dedicated to keeping alive the memory and tradition of African-American cowboys from the Old West.
Mm-hmm.
They're based out of the Hole in the outer borough neighborhood of New York City.
Okay.
So out of the 35,000 cowboys in the Western frontier during the 1870s and 80s, 25% were Black.
Wow.
Yeah. The Federation honors this legacy through youth programs, rodeos, and school visits while using horsemanship to teach local youth life skills.
Which is awesome.
Yeah, patience, kindness, and tolerance.
It's so funny because when I was growing up, there were so many things. Like, I used to do horseback riding, and people were like, that's for white people. I was like, really? Riding horses is totally only in the domain of white people.
Yes, that's
nobody exactly else in the history of the horse and man has ridden horses.
I know.
That's awesome.
Yes. So
they're in the city doing this. I wonder where they ride.
They, in 1994, the FBC was the official,
the FBC?
Yeah, Federation of Black Cowboys, was the official incorporated and leased to the Cedar Lane Stables in Queens from the Parks.
Okay, cool.
Licensing happens annually, and historically, this federation is the only bidder. They do it. Nobody else comes in and challenges them.
But look, you're really going to get it from Black Cowboys? Come on.
Yeah.
Like, that sounds like some tough customers.
Right. In 2015, the latest licensing agreement ended, and the city released a public request. And in 2016, they were informed the license would not be renewed.
What?
I know. And it was transferred to Gallup NYC, a nonprofit aiding disabled people through therapeutic horsemanship.
Okay, can't they do both?
I know.
That's terrible.
But then, yeah, so.
It's a hard, I mean, horseback riding is a very expensive sport. I know there's some stables up by me in the Bronx. And even though, like, it's not that accessible, it's, you know, the prices are quite high.
And horses are a lot of work.
Yeah, they're a lot of work.
You've got to brush them. You've got to do all kinds of things to them, feed them. I mean, obviously.
But, like, even just the regular veterinary, when you think about how much money it takes to keep a dog versus a horse. I mean, you know, it's all the same thing. The shots, the vet, all that kind of stuff.
Not only that, like, my aunt has horses in Colorado, outside of Aspen.
And, it must be a little easier there. Does she have a farm?
Yeah, she has like a little ranch. Okay. And so she has a couple of horses, and she loves her horses, and that's great. My cousin, who is my age, I went out there, and she's like, I said, I wanted to go riding. She's, sure, I'll take you out. But we have to get the horses saddled up. There's nobody else doing that for
you. It's a lot of work. Did you have to muck out stables and stuff, too?
They did not go that far with me. Thank you. Thank you.
They gave you the Aunt visitor P. special. Yeah.
Thank you, Cousin T and Aunt P.
It's all work. It's all work.
But I was just like, you had to brush down the horse first to make sure there's no burrs or anything in them, because you put the blanket on and then the saddle on, and because you don't want any irritation on your skin.
You don't want to get bucked off.
Oh, my God. It was like,
did you clean out the hooves? Did you have to do that part?
I don't remember.
That, to me, was always the scariest part before and after the ride, is cleaning out there. There's an area in the horse's hoof. It's called the frog. It's like a little V shape. Mm-hmm. Basically, what you do is you stand towards the back of the horse, and then you tap them. They lift up their foot. You catch it. You hold it in your hand. Now, this is something that could kill you. And then you take a metal pick, and you proceed to clean out, you know, whatever dirt and stuff that might be in there. This was a frightening experience for me as a child.
Yeah.
I did not like holding a horse's foot.
Yeah, I don't like holding a human's foot.
It's scary.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, like, what if, here I am digging away at its foot. What if I dig too hard and it just decides to kick me in the head? Mm-hmm. Be on me. That would be on me.
Yeah.
You know?
That's a good.
There's no reasoning with it.
Yeah. You have to respect
You just have to go with it.
My aunt woke me up early once. She said, oh, you know, she had to take her horses somewhere and they should have put them in the trailer and then drive them wherever. She woke me up. She's like, my horse is frightened and doesn't want to go in the trailer. So you need to go in first and pull the rope.
Oh, hell to the no.
Oh, I did it. But I was like,
were you terrified?
I was terrified.
And I'm not scared of horses, but that's, you're like trapped in there.
And not only that, she had I know nothing. And it's so dangerous. Cause like she had to tell me not to wrap. Cause I started wrapping the rope around
my hand. No.
That's so idiotic of me.
But how would you know that? That's not, you know, you're trying to get as tight a grip as you can because that's what you've been told to do.
Yeah, because listeners, imagine a horse, the power of a horse, and you pulls its head back, and you have the rope wrapped around your hand.
You get flung.
Your hand, all the skin comes off.
Yeah. Oh, that's terrible.
But I should have teach me how to hold a rope.
No, you know what? I only know this stuff because I used to ride horses. Mm-hmm. But like when I've gone out with people, even when I'm on vacation, I see them doing stuff like that. I'm like, dude, do you want to get flung?
Yeah.
Because that's what's going to happen. Like you need to have a tight hold, but you also need to be able to release quickly.
Yes.
Because the last thing you want to do is be trailing behind a horse on some kind of rope attached to them.
Yeah, really. You just have to
have a lot of equipment.
A patient horse and a patient person who knows to talk to you.
And some of those horses are not having it, just like some people are not having it.
Right, never walk behind a horse?
No! I see people like coming up behind horses. I'm like, are you kidding me?
Don't ever walk behind a horse.
Approach them from the front.
If you have to get to the other side of the horse, you go around the front.
Yes, go around the front.
Don't go around the back.
No, you're inviting a kick.
And then we went out riding, and we were out for a couple of hours. It was time to get off the horse.
Did you take the sack of potatoes method? How did you get off?
Well, I tried to get off, but my foot got stuck in the stirrup, and I fell off the horse and onto my back.
Oh, no!
With my left foot.
Still in the stirrup. Classic.
Yeah. And the horse looked at me.
And they just looked back like, lady.
She was like, you're so lucky the horse didn't take
didn't
off.
Didn't run off?
With you, I was like...
But you know, the horse was like, I should just fucking take off.
Yeah.
This is ridiculous. She has embarrassed me, herself, a family.
She's from New Jersey.
She's from New Jersey. What is she even doing here? Yeah, yeah, they love to take off. When there's 1 foot in, it's like, yeah, here yeah. I go.
Oh, my God.
It must be funny to them. Like, how long can they hold on?
Get it
with
off.
Just 1 foot. Yes, get off.
It's like trying to drag, like when you have a piece of toilet paper stuck to your shoe. And just try to...
My favorite, and I've seen this, it sounds like comedy sketches, but it's not. I've seen people get the leg up and just go right on over the other side of the horse and land on the other side on the ground. It's like, what? Are you serious? I've seen people get on backwards with flair. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't know how they've done it. They've, like, put their heel in first and then swung the other leg around. Like, you see something wrong here, buddy?
Yeah, that's funny.
I like it. Hey, at least you got up there.
So thank you, ES.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, thank you, thank
I hope
you.
Those cowboys get their franchise back.
Okay, me too.
So I found this here on a website called The Demoniacal. This is Ooh. How to tell if you've been hoodooed or
hoodoo.
Cursed.
Okay, hoodoo.
So
it's
you
different.
Said you've known hoodoo.
I've heard of hoodoo, which is similar to voodoo.
Okay.
Or not similar. But
I don't know.
Something else.
Here it's been used as cursed.
Okay.
Right? So hoodoo is a curse, and hoodoo is to be cursed. So, you know, many people wonder how to determine if they have been cursed or hoodooed. The following is to provide to help people recognize the signs that one has indeed been cursed. Now, I'm reading through this. I'm like, we're all cursed. Please keep in mind that the majority of people who have been cursed never realize they've been cursed. And if they happen to be non-believers, we're normally deny they are cursed. Even as well-wishers are like, dude, you've been cursed.
Oh,
you've been
okay.
hoodooed. So here are the signs that you may be hoodooed.
So this is a curse.
This is that you've been cursed. That someone's put a hex on you. I'm using these as synonyms. They may not be. Mm-hmm. I don't really know. Out of the ordinary string of bad luck with multiple negative experiences in a short frame of time.
Ooh.
You've been cursed. Feelings of physical exhaustion.
Okay.
Or fatigue. This is all of New York.
Yeah.
Like you've been cursed. Financial difficulties.
Uh-oh.
Difficulty sleeping. Odd nightmares or dreams. Just general angst. Feelings of anger. Experiencing negative presence. So this could be, I interpret this as like seeing shadow people. Mm. Or, you know what I mean? Like a negative
entity. Not just like, you know, the guy down the block.
No, not just a dick.
Yeah.
Like an actual, like feeling like you're in the presence of like gloom or like a dark cloud kind of thing. You know, actual demonic or spirit possession, I would say, yeah, mm-hmm. if you have that one. If your pets die.
Ooh.
I know. You have a breakup. If you have an unusual accident, either you or me, the people around you tripping, falling, weird things are happening to them. Now here's one that I'm like, okay, finding, because the rest of these are kind of like, yeah, whatever. Mm-hmm. Finding strange powders, bags, bottles, dolls, charms or fetishes in one's home. So if you're in your apartment and you see a small doll that looks like you, chances are
you're cursed.
Like, why not start with that one?
Yeah.
Like, when you came home and there's like a small, like there's like, you know, three different color powders front of the threshold of your, you know, your apartment.
Somebody is doing it, coming up on your door.
Someone is doing it, you know? Or here's another one. Somebody tells you, I've cursed you.
Mm-hmm.
That's also a sign that you might be cursed. So the good thing about this is curses ebb and flow.
Mm-hmm.
They don't last forever. So if you have been cursed,
they're not super strong.
Yeah, they
wear off.
Yeah, they wear off. Okay. I mean, the point is the person isn't trying to kill you. Otherwise, mm-hmm. they would kill you. They're mm-hmm. just trying to, like, you know, give you a hard time for a while. It says, and the curses fade because at first it starts to work. Then like mm-hmm. an old, like perfume,
mm-hmm.
you know, it gets lighter and lighter and lighter and then it is gone. They said that the most powerful curses of all time. And I started to look into this. And actually, Catholicism deals with this a lot, too.
Yeah.
The intergenerational curse. I didn't know that was a thing.
Well, talk about, what do you...
Like, you could be, like, so I curse you and your children and your children's children and your children's children.
Yeah.
So this is the most enduring kind of a curse that can happen.
Mm-hmm.
And as I started reading, too, a lot of different Christian denominations have ways of dealing with these. Just like with mm-hmm. exorcism. I had no idea.
Yeah.
Exorcism we know about.
Right.
But this curse thing, I didn't know.
Yeah, it's like, I think, like, the Kennedys had a curse on them.
I don't believe in curses, but yeah, if anybody was going to have a curse, it's
like
them.
In the 20s.
Yeah.
It started, you know, the patriarch of the Kennedys, yeah, he was cursed. That, and they said specifically, all your generations will have.
And now there's like no one left.
Yeah.
Just the kind of, you know, the lame ones. Kennedy light.
I kind of feel like the world was cursed in 2016. There was a massive curse,
yeah,
on everybody.
Somebody put a hex on us.
Yeah.
Maybe it was the moon. Maybe, yeah, that planet we downgraded.
Yeah.
It was like, take this.
The universe. Here's the theory then. There's so much space garbage.
Yes. That
we put out there. Exactly. And so they're like, the universe is like, who is responsible for polluting, you know, everybody else?
We forget, who did this?
Earth did this? Oh, in the U.S.
Oh, I don't see anybody else out here. So I think it's you. Like, who put this here?
So they're like, you know what?
Is this what you do with your trash?
So guess what?
Curse.
Boom.
Take it back. So yeah, I thought that was just interesting. How to know if you've been hoodooed or cursed.
Hey, You Know It is a free podcast, free of charge, FOC.
Free as a bird, free falling even. Well, it's free for listeners.
We put a lot of hard work into this.
Editing and online hosting is frankly thirsty work. It gets pretty dry in this studio. And you know we love a tasteful white wine. If you like our style, consider buying the gal a drink. We've added a PayPal donation button to heyyouknowit.com so you can show us some love with a one-time or recurring donation to cover a little something from the vine.
For $5, you'll be hooking us up with a happy hour glass of tasteful white wine, a 4-ounce pour. For a 10 spot, we can split a bottle of wine from the bodega across the street. For $15, we can kick it with a jug, because who are we kidding? For $25, you'll be making our dreams come true with a box of tasteful white wine concealed with a Mylar skin. Box of wine.
I'd like to talk about the humpback whales.
Oh, cool. I've always wanted to see one of those, but I'm a little scared.
Don't be scared, because you know what? They're pretty awesome.
Okay. I agree, but they're huge.
Humpback whales around the globe are mysteriously rescuing animals from orcas.
Huh?
Yes. Scientists are baffled at this seemingly altruistic behavior.
Wait, they're always baffled when animals are kind.
Yeah.
Is it because we're that asshole of a species that we can't understand that another species might be nice?
Yeah, but they say humans might not be the only creature who care about the welfare of other animals. Some humans.
Yeah, some humans.
Scientists are beginning to recognize a pattern in humpback whale behavior around the world, mm-hmm, and their seemingly intentional effort to rescue animals that are being hunted by killer whales.
So what do they do?
So this is amazing. Okay. This one marine ecologist observed a particularly dramatic example of this behavior back in 2009. While observing a pod of killer whales hunting a seal trapped on an ice floe Antarctica.
Okay.
The orcas were able to successfully knock the seal off the ice.
Yeah, that's what they do. It's really scary to watch.
And just as they were closing in for the kill, a magnificent humpback whale suddenly rose up out of the water beneath the seal.
Was he like, now?
This was no mere accident. In order to better protect the seal, the whale placed it safely on its upturned belly and kept it up out of the water.
Oh man, I bet you that pod was angry. They needed that seal.
And as
they were just about to get him.
I know. And as the seal slipped down the whale's side, the humpback whale appeared to use its flippers to carefully help the seal back aboard.
Was the seal like, I don't know how this is going to go.
Finally, when the coast was clear, the seal was able to safely swim off to another more secure ice floe.
Wow. See, what this says to me is that this has always been happening. We just haven't been looking at it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's fascinating.
Another event involved a pair of humpback whales attempting to save a gray whale calf from a hunting pod of orcas after it became separated from its mother.
Because Greenpeace is not holding up its end of the bargain. The whales are doing it for themselves.
Yeah, some BBC filmmakers captured this, so you can go and Google that.
That's crazy. Oh, I want to. Was it in a documentary, or is it just like a short, I'm going to find this. I love this kind of stuff.
Yeah. Perhaps the most stunning aspect of this behavior, it's not just a few isolated incidents.
Everyone's doing it.
Yeah.
Everybody's in on it.
Humpback whale rescue teams have been witnessing foiling killer whale hunts from Antarctica to the North Pacific.
They just fucking it up royal for the killer whales.
Yeah. It's as if humpback whales everywhere are saying to killer whales, pick on someone your own size.
Wow.
It seems to be a global effort.
Well, they do talk to each other.
Yeah.
Maybe they have a meeting. once a year in the deep sea, and they're like, what are we doing this year? We're on seals.
Yeah, but it's like, get the orca.
Oh, it's the orca in their place. So maybe we see it as being altruistic for the seals, mm-hmm. but maybe they're like, we're trying to starve out these orcas.
Yeah, maybe they're sick of the orcas.
We're tired of it.
The orcas are like the dicks of the sea.
Well, they do. They attack baby whales. Mm-hmm. I know that. And they are a danger to a lot of, whale species. Mm-hmm. So maybe they're like, let's go get some.
Yeah, they're like, let's starve them off.
When you're
they're not going to eat them.
Yes. I love this. I was just reading an article earlier today about how spiders, if there's an abundance of food and mm-hmm. space and everything's cool, they kind of live separately. Mm-hmm. But if they're in areas where there's less food, or if there are a lot of single mom spiders, the spiders will then band together to share resources.
Wow.
And they've been observing this. So this is my idea that the more we observe animals, the more that we will see how not human like they are mm-hmm. in their behavior. And that by that, I mean, they're not assholes, mm-hmm. that they will help each other. So they were thinking before that animals only work together to protect their offspring and members of their immediate mm-hmm. family. But they found that these spiders, which we don't think as being very social creatures, mm-hmm. will band together if they see a lot of spiders who are single moms and they need help.
Wow.
You know, they need a little extra groceries, a little childcare.
Yeah.
You know? They will chip in, which I think is awesome.
That's great.
I'm going to watch this video. I love stuff like that.
Yeah.
I understand that the killer whales need to eat, but I also respect the fact that the whale is pretty much the king of the sea on this one.
And they're the cowboys of the sea.
Yeah. And they're going around protecting seals. Like, I wonder what the seals, like, are they going to ask for something later from the seals?
Yeah, but they're protecting the babies because there's a mature humpback whales are too large and formidable to be hunted by orcas themselves, but their calves are vulnerable. So their kids are being hunted too.
And they're like, look, they're killing everyone's kids.
Yeah.
We're not standing for it.
Yes.
But I'm just wondering if the seals are expected to get a payback or tribute.
I would, if I were a seal.
What can they do?
I bring fish to them.
Clap at them. Thank you.
Yeah.
Bring fish.
I would.
If I see that video, I'll be done. Like, if they deliver a seal safely, and then, like, 15 minutes later, the whale's still hanging out there, like, kind of waiting for a tip.
Yeah. Okay.
And then some seals show up with some fish, and he's like, all right, it'll do. That's awesome.
I love it.
So I found this thing here. Just a really short piece. Man rages against Kim Kardashian in bookstore, quote-unquote, massacre. Mm-hmm. So I was like, what do they mean by massacre? Apparently, this is an older gentleman, 74. He went into a Barnes & Noble in Connecticut and poured red liquid on her books.
Okay.
And I say to you, sir, bravo. I doff my hat to you. Someone had to do something. The security camera shows him pouring liquid on the book, which are a collection of Kardashian's favorite selfies. The six of the coffee table books. Now, this is a huge coffee table book of selfies she's taken. They look, a lot of them look like duck face mm-hmm. from what I've seen.
Or mouse face.
I don't know why anyone's buying this book, why they would want to see, like, you look at a selfie on your phone, mm-hmm. right? Or on the internet or Instagram right. or something like that. Why you want a coffee table book of someone looking bizarre into the camera at themselves is weird. So this guy, police reported that the books destroyed in the massacre could not be revived. Obviously, the cops didn't give an F.
Yeah.
And you can tell that they go, the massacre, the book could not be revived.
Yeah.
What a shame.
This is, a book of selfies.
Yeah.
Like a very narcissistic and a joke. Like, you can buy these pictures that I took myself.
That's what I'm saying. Who's buying this? I don't know these people who are buying these kind of books. I have no idea who this is. The guy apparently turned himself in. They didn't even bother to arrest him. Yeah. He just showed up the next day and was like, it was me.
And they're like, oh, yeah. Okay, Paul.
He was ready. Carl, actually.
Carl.
He was released on $2,500 bond. Oh. I'm sure that's going to be a tough case.
Well, Sizzlin Sharif.
If I were the judge, I'd be like, oh, it was selfies, dismissed. Mm-hmm. Dismissed.
Yes.
One day community service.
Right.
One day community service. Just for, I guess, he could have accidentally gotten ink on some real books.
Yeah, exactly.
And probably the people in Barnes & Noble had to clean up a little bit. And if you're working, I haven't done retail in a while, but I don't know what I would do if I were like a young person working retail and this older gentleman, he looks really sweet, just came in and was like, that's it.
Yeah.
And poured red liquid on.
Be like, come, sir.
Yeah.
Sir.
What do you need?
Yeah. What can we help you with?
Yeah. They asked me if it was on camera, but if they were like, did someone come in here and pour red ink? I'd be like, no, I didn't see anything. Mm-hmm. I didn't see anything. All right, what do you have?
Oh, before we go, I'd just like to thank again all of you listeners who so generously are sending us a little wine.
Yeah,
money.
We are really enjoying the taste of white wine.
So thank
you've given
you.
Us. Thank you.
You have gone to our website and used the PayPal donation button. We want to thank you. It was very, very nice.
It was very nice. Yeah. It's touching. Yeah.
Thank you for listening to Hey You Know It. Stay in touch with us during the week. Follow us on Twitter. Follow us on Tumblr. Go to iTunes and leave us a 5-star review. We'll read it on an upcoming show, regardless of content.
As always, we love your emails. Send us an email at heyyouknowit@gmail.com with your comments, questions, and segment ideas. Emails will also be read on upcoming shows.
Please tell your friends about us, because you know we don't advertise. And let them know we can be found on iTunes, at Stitcher.com, and at heyyouknowit.com. Thanks.
It
have
wears
you ever
off.
Felt that way?
Have I ever felt cursed?
Yeah.
Or
have you had a string of bad luck that has...
I always say I have no luck whatsoever. It's not good. It's not bad. No. I've never really had bad luck. I have good timing. But bad luck? No, there are days, though, when I feel like everything I put my hands on crumbles.
Yeah.
But that's usually my fault.
But it's just like a day. It doesn't last.
No, it doesn't last very long. Maybe it's just like a really shitty hoodoo.
Yeah.
24-hour hoodoo. Like a virus.
I went through a series of a good couple of months where everything was falling apart. Everything that I touched.
Just crumbled?
Everything just, it was a downward spiral.
But then you know it's going to come back up because you got nowhere to go.
Yeah.
I'd be more concerned. I've had some, and I'm sure this happened to you too, I've had like some time periods where like everything's falling into place and I'm like, I probably have cancer.
Oh no.
You know, that's where my mind goes. I'm like, all these good things are happening. I'm probably going to trip and fall and be wearing like bad underwear.
Like,
and have something embarrassing in my purse.
Yeah.
All right, what do you have?